Being completely honest, the jungle is a pretty boring place to be.
Welcome, Tribe, to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. My guest today is Damiano Ravindran. He's a YouTuber, a psychedelic journalist, an all-around cool, deep, and spiritual guy. I really enjoyed talking to him. You can find him on YouTube at Just Don't Fall. He got rather noticed online, to say, because he tracked and video blogged his ayahuasca experience down in Ecuador. And him and I talk about his experience with ayahuasca. We go deep into some spiritual aspects of ayahuasca. And we talk about some pretty wild things. But it was a deep conversation. I really enjoyed it. I hope you enjoy it too. And hopefully maybe it answers some questions for you that you may be having about psychedelics or ayahuasca or something. But let's get to it.
I totally know what that means. I think once you start like walking down the ayahuasca path, there's not much that's not surreal. So, like stuff like that. I meet the people like you who like cross my path, and it's always something that's that a normal person will find weird. I think the type of life that this spiritual path or whatever you want to call it kind of brings.
I started recording, man, after I asked that question, because I figured something good was going to come out after I asked the question. I was just talking previous, about how, I watched someone like you on YouTube, and I mean, your videos left me speechless. I got to be honest, and that's hard for me to do because I'm not a speechless person.
Cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I guess that's a compliment. Yeah, man, the videos have been crazy. I originally wasn't even planning on making them. Everything kind of started falling into place when I first started hearing the call for ayahuasca. And then, I was just in Ecuador with my camera, and I was like, being completely honest, the jungle is a pretty boring place to be, most of the time. So, you have your camera, and I had my camera, and I was just kind of recording, and the videos are just kind of what came out of it, and that entire adventure was just insane. Even thinking about it now, I still can't believe that happened. Like, that was a chapter in my life. If I detach myself from Damiano and, who that human was, I can't believe that actually happened, that I went down to South America and drank this crazy thing that changed my entire life, it was just crazy.
You're that guy, Damiano.
It's still insane. I can't, it's hard to wrap my head around this existing. Now it's 13 months since I came back from the jungle, so it's been a good year now. So I've been doing a year of integration of, and all of the teachings and all of the experiences that I've had through those ayahuasca ceremonies. And it's just been insane, the amount of personal growth that I have done over the past 13 months. It's been exponential compared to anything that has happened to me before. And I can't speak for everybody, because I know that it's not everyone that has the same I guess you can say a reaction or outcome to their ayahuasca ceremonies, but to me, it's just been positive the entire way. So, I'm blessed for that and grateful and, all that stuff that comes with it.
I'd love to go back. Now, you were 24, right? This a year ago?
Yeah, so I was 24 a year ago. I'm 25 now, turned 26 in November. But, I was 24, and
And even at that age, at such a young age, at 24, you were that guy that went, you talk about the calling. What is that like? What does the calling of ayahuasca feel like?
It's kind of different from it varies from person to person from what I've been able to tell. But for me personally, I got to a point in 2013 or something like that. Yeah, it was like April 2013 where I literally hit my rock bottom. I was going through a bunch of stuff with school. I was in university at the time, not doing so well. Then I went through some craziness with the police. I got arrested, but it, you know, wasn't my fault. And that all, I had to deal with that whole craziness and suing the police here in Montreal for false arrest and racial profiling and all that stuff. And
that story?
It's something that happened to me 2 years ago where I was literally just hanging out in downtown, well, not close to the downtown area in Montreal, and I was hanging out in a car with my black friend and my Arabic friend, and I'm a brown guy, so right there, not starting off if there was a racist guy passing by, we're like definitely a target. And I guess something happened that night. I'm still not 100% sure of what exactly happened, but the police got called for an unrelated thing. Like, we had done nothing. We were just hanging out in a car. There's literally no other way to explain it. Like, a cop car came behind us and parked right there, and then five other cop cars came. They opened their doors. 12 police officers came out, pointed their guns at us. Told us to get out of the car, like, you know, put our hands up, all that spiel. People came out of their houses and started taking pictures of us, and all this craziness happened. And then, you know, there were a couple of racial slurs that were, that were thrown around and stuff. And I didn't appreciate that. You know, those police officers were so sure that they had gotten the right people. But then, like kind of something like 45 minutes into the entire situation, they realized that it wasn't us. And at the time I was already going through some challenging, I guess you can say I was having like, I was reaching my end, because I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress when I was fairly young. So I had been dealing with that my entire life, but I was reaching my rock bottom, and then when that happened, that was like the stress from that and the anxiety from it and everything just kind of brought me to my lowest point, to my very lowest moment. And I remember being on my bed that night and being like, wow, like this really fucking sucks. I have to deal with all these legal problems. Probably gonna drop out of school because of all these, like my brain didn't feel like, I didn't feel like myself, right? And all of that. And literally to the point where I was contemplating suicide. Like I did not see a way out, and it was just a very strange place to be mentally. I just kind of told myself, you know, I'll give myself one more day. And see where it goes. And the next day was the day that I heard ayahuasca for the first time. And that was the day that I heard the call. And to me, what the call felt like was literally like a switch had been turned on in my brain. It was kind of like I heard ayahuasca, and then it was like I recognized the word somehow, even though I never heard about it. I didn't know at that point what it was. I just knew it. I just knew it. It got my attention, and I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast, and it was Aubrey Marcus that was on, and I was listening to his story and this crazy thing. And after that, ayahuasca just completely took over my thought pattern. There was nothing else I could think about after that. It was literally I went from rock bottom to. I know exactly what I have to do, and I have to get myself to ayahuasca. I don't know how I'm going to do it because I'm broke and I have literally nothing and I'm at rock bottom, but I'm going to figure this out. So one thing led to the next, ended up bringing the police to court and going through that entire legal thing and settling out of court, made a good substantial amount of money, just enough for me to go down to South America and find ayahuasca. So literally after I made the decision the day after, my lowest point, I was just like, I'm gonna somehow, I don't know how, but I'm gonna somehow find my way to ayahuasca. And then after that, within a year, things just fell into place, and synchronicities in my life just started happening, and I just followed them, and you know, ended up in South America, which was crazy.
You're a fucking superhero, man.
Dude, far from it, man. I think it's ayahuasca, man. It's the power of ayahuasca, you know, one of the things that I've noticed when I tell the story, there's usually two reactions I get. Either people are impressed, or people think I'm crazy. Either way, it's cool because they don't forget it. But I feel like, you know, if you really start looking into this and you start looking into the calling for ayahuasca and what ayahuasca has done for so many people, especially people like me who had post-traumatic stress, or people that had, you know, drug addiction or other mental disorders, you know, a lot of them talk about exactly the same arc that I went through, where you go to your lowest point, and then when you're there, ayahuasca just kind of calls. And even though the calling feels different to different people, that's happening all over the world. You know, so when I went down to South America for the first time, I went with this YouTuber that I met online. Her name is Taylor Marie, and she's in my videos.
Yeah, I saw her on there, and I was going to ask you, how did you know where to go? Because, you know, you hear bad stories, I hear good stories. You know, I myself have never tried ayahuasca, but, you know, but psychedelics, definitely, psilocybin, etc. I wondered, how did you know? I mean, you're 24, and you're going through, I mean, I'm just going to recap, man, you're 24, you're at rock bottom in life. You're experiencing just shit life, and you're wanting to even leave this planet. And now, me being a therapist and a counselor, I met many people in that situation, been there myself. And at 24, you're facing all this, only to face more PTSD from racial profiling in your own town. And this also happens to be the way that gets you the funds to get there. Like you had to experience this new shit that we're gonna give you, so you can come do this.
Yeah, man, it was crazy. And the way I found Taylor too, it was literally, I mean, this might sound crazy, and I totally get people that think this is crazy, but I swear this is the only way I know how to explain it. It was the spirit of ayahuasca. It was literally this intelligent being or entity or force or whatever you want to call it that's behind this plant, and it's behind this altered state of consciousness. And that, you know, I clearly remember after that show with Aubrey Marcus and Joe Rogan, when I had that light switch go on in my brain, I clearly remember, like, I got the feeling that it wasn't in my hands anymore, and that I had help now, and that I can trust that help. And that I just had to follow the synchronicities in my life, and that's exactly what I did. And so, you know, it's really hard to explain, but it's the only way I can explain it.
So how did you meet her in this? What's the synchronicity here?
So basically, I started doing a lot of research when it came to ayahuasca, to the point where I became just obsessed. I was in school at the time, and all of my school papers that semester, I remember, they all had some sort of mention of ayahuasca in it. I just could not stop reading about ayahuasca and watching everything I could. And eventually I fell onto Taylor's videos. And I found Taylor, like, really genuine, and she seemed cool. And also the fact that she's the same age as me. We're really good friends now, but at the time when I didn't know her, what I liked was the fact that she was the same age as me. So, you know, she talked about the calling and you know, stuff like that was happening to me, but that it had happened to her as well in a different way. And I just literally decided to tweet her one day, and she answered my tweet, and then we started emailing, and one email led to the next, and turns out that she was actually organizing a retreat for a bunch of people right at that moment when I tweeted her. And she was like, oh, cool, yeah, you can totally come with me. And I was like, all right, well, when's your retreat? And she was like, I think it was the last 2 weeks of July last year, 2014. And I remember I had work, and my manager, I was working at a pharmacy at the time, and my manager, he was taking his vacation at that point, and I was like, damn it, I can't go. And I was like, I'm sorry, I really can't go. I'm managing this pharmacy, and I can't just leave. Like, I have employees that, you know, that are, you know, that look up to me to open the store and make sure that things are running properly. And Taylor was like, okay, well, when would work for you? And I was like, well, the following 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of August, which also had a significance to me going in that time, which I found out later on. But, and then Taylor was like, I'm actually there for 4 weeks, so you can come down those 2 weeks. And I ended up going down and meeting Taylor and the native village where I was introduced to ayahuasca and that entire culture and all of that craziness.
Well, for everyone listening, his YouTube is Just Don't Fall. I love that name. Where did Just Don't Fall come from?
Dude, it's actually totally unrelated to ayahuasca. So if you go to my YouTube channel, the first video that you see, it's me and one of my best friends from high school. Mm-hmm. Going through an abandoned building, and that was our thing. That was my thing before psychedelics. I would go and search for abandoned buildings and just record my time there and take pictures of the art, because all these graffiti artists used to go to these abandoned buildings and practice their art. So I started you know, urban exploring when I was really young, and I noticed that you know, every time you go to one of these buildings, the walls always look different. It's like an organic gallery, like an art gallery, but it's organic. It's happening on its own, you know. No one is there to curate it, you know. It's just all these kids from high school and stuff like that. They go there and they just paint, and the more they paint, the better they get at their art, and the art just gets crazier. So,
whoa, that is,
yeah,
wow,
yeah,
man.
So my first video was about one of those abandoned buildings. It was the first time that me and my friend from high school got there, and we had so much equipment on us. We had our cameras, our tripods, like so much stuff. And the building was not entirely solid. So at certain times, I don't know how many times that night, he just went like, is this safe? And I was like, yeah, just don't fall, though. Just don't fall. So it kind of became like that adventure's like tagline. So when we decided to open this YouTube channel, which was originally me and him, we called it Just Don't Fall. And eventually that project kind of fell through, and then the whole ayahuasca thing started.
Well, I got to be honest.
I just kept it.
It fits, because you were at a point in life where you just didn't want to fall.
Yeah, pretty much,
I mean,
yeah.
I love the name. I think it fits perfectly, man. I mean, because when I get the backstory, I had a question written down of, you know, what was the backstory? Because I want to know, why did he have to go search? What was happening to him? And so now, you know, I trace this back and I connect all this, and it's like Just Don't Fall fits, because you were just hanging on not to fall.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, when I was at my lowest point, and, you know, and this is a part of the story that I don't usually talk about in my videos, but, you know, when I was at that point, you know, when you get to the point of suicide, and people that have been there kind of know, but it takes a lot of courage to do it. It does, you know, like you're there and you're like, you know, you're contemplating it for such a long time, and then when you get to the end and you're like, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna actually do it. And it took so much courage and so much, you know, vulnerability for me to even consider going there. That I was like, okay, if something doesn't happen, if I go to sleep tonight and something doesn't happen by tomorrow I'm dead. Like, there's no way I am staying here. And now looking back at it, it was totally a broken perception. You know, like I was just into my life, into myself. I didn't see a way out. There were tons of ways out. But in a way, knowing what I know about ayahuasca, I feel like that could totally have been her. You know, this entire thing could have been her. Like, who knows, right? And again, when I talk publicly about these type of things, I'm always a little iffy. And, you know, I didn't put out those videos. If you look at the timeline from when I came back from Ecuador to when I put out my Ayahuasca Part 2 video, which is my trip report.
That one got me, man.
You know, my trip report, it took me a few months to be comfortable to be able to talk about what I experienced with ayahuasca. And one of my main concerns was actually, you know, I don't want to look crazy. You know, I don't want to be that guy who, you know, brings out things that don't make scientific sense and, you know, can't completely explain them. And I remember at the time I was talking to one of my friends about whether I should put this video out, because I knew I wanted to tell the story, but I wasn't 100% confident that I was the right person to tell it. My friend actually brought up a really good point, and that was that, you know, just, there's nothing to hide here, right? It's, if you don't believe it, well, then I'm not special, and anyone can drink ayahuasca. And I feel like that's the advantage with this type of medicine, is that it's not really hidden to anyone, and it's not secretive. And, you know, if, like you said, I was young, I was 24, and if a 24-year-old with nothing can find his way there, I feel like anybody who really feels the call and feels like this is something that could help them, you know, can eventually find their way there. You know, so I put out the video to help other people, and eventually I got over the whole criticism of myself that I had at the time. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, man, and got over the strength. And I'm not a Bible thumper Christian person at all by any means. And even on my last podcast with my buddy Steve, I put out some arguments, some strong ones. And I've heard people sound just like you when they talk about the calling to, like, Christ and shit like that. And, like, it's crazy. But, like, people think it, right? But then when you experience it like you do, it's such a weird, you know what I mean? I could feel your apprehension, you know what I mean? That
yeah.
Oh, I'm going to sound like, what do they say, a kook or some shit, right?
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly where I was. You know, I didn't want to sound like one of those people who had a spiritual experience or talks about having a spiritual experience, but then can't properly convey the experience.
But you did it, man. I mean, you bravely went through it, and my friend, you kept me captivated on that second video. I didn't have to write notes anymore. I was so caught on you. You know, and all I wrote down, to what's pretty cool, is what I wrote down to vet the whole, was it 38 minutes, that second video, the trip report?
And yeah.
I wrote this, and what I wrote down is that feeling of love, ayahuasca, she is everything, ocean vision, awareness is the key to creation, up awareness, up creation, and this is how we all have our superpower in this realm. There are levels of awareness. That, dude, it was powerful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. And that's 38 minutes, and that's all I needed to remember, like, what you were talking about. Like, dude, you don't sound crazy, man.
But you know what? The crazy part is that now I can't – I have a hard time rewatching that video because, I mean, I experienced it, right? So I know that my words do it no justice, you know? Like, they do the actual experience no justice at all. They're not even close. I just tried to convey it as you know, as well as I can, but it still escapes, man. It's still not 100% there. Like, it's something that transcends language, and because it transcends language, it's really hard to convey what it actually is when you don't have words in English to describe what you're actually experiencing. You know what I mean? It's just insane. And then that's the crazy part about psychedelics, man. Like, that's kind of what I was left with after six ceremonies in the jungle was that there is no way that, I mean, I can talk about this all I want, but there's no way that I'm ever going to convince anybody that there's any value in these experiences if they haven't actually had the experience themselves. And, you know, now I'm kind of, you know, throughout the past year, I've, you know, I moved to San Francisco at some point, and then I hung out with some people from MAPS. I got to interview and meet Rick Doblin, and I saw the way that he's been going at it for the past, you know, 60 years or something. Oh, he's 60, so for the past, like, 30 years or something. You know, just relating it to an actual medical healing, like, to an actual medical thing where people can see the value in it. But honestly,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, but honestly, my own personal experience, and in my own personal opinion, and you know, don't take this as if it's like 100% right. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I feel like the healing itself in ayahuasca, it's kind of like a side effect. It's kind of like a small part of what ayahuasca actually is. And what ayahuasca actually is, it's something way, way bigger than just the healing that it provides.
So it's even stronger than the healing. Man, how powerful does something have to be when healing, you know, PTSD in a man who's contemplating suicide changes as a side effect?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the best way that I can explain it now, it's when I feel like when I was at my lowest point, my perception was so limited by all these barriers that I saw and that I created myself. And ayahuasca just kind of shows you the process of expansion of your and contraction of your own consciousness and your own awareness. And you know, the best way that I can explain it is that when I went through that entire death process and understanding death and what death actually is, the first thing that I remembered was no longer having the limitation of perception that my body gave me, and also realizing that I have a limitation to the experience that I'm having because of the perception that my body is allowing me to have. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's one of those things.
Yeah, we're limited. Our physical or our realms here are limited to what we can do, almost constrained in a way.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, when I realized that I was experiencing death, I was super contemplative and super analytical, the most analytical I've ever been. And I was aware of every little thing that I was experiencing in the that was happening to me, and I was definitely no longer in my body, which is a feeling I never had before until that point, but that I recognized.
I get that. So, I mean, you talk about that on your video when when you asked what death meant, and that was your question going into it, among other questions. You know,
yeah.
And the fact she showed you this, you know, and for those listening, when we're referencing she, it's an ayahuasca reference, right? I'm getting it correct to Lady Ayahuasca?
Yeah, Mother Ayahuasca. So, ayahuasca, well, every natural psychedelic, I feel, has kind of a guiding force behind it. A lot of people who have tried psilocybin, maybe you can connect with this, but a lot of people who have tried psilocybin will notice that the trip usually ends the way it started, and there's like always this loop in it. Like I don't know, a lot of people kind of notice that. There's definitely something that I've noticed, and it's kind of similar with ayahuasca, where it feels like something is guiding you through the trip. You know what I mean? And you know, that guiding force or power or spirit or entity, whatever you want to call it, it's a very motherly, nurturing, female entity that feels like a mother. So a lot of people over the years have called her Mother Ayahuasca, and I think it's fitting.
I can hear the feminist now. They find a way to get mad at this shit too. Like, what do you mean? Why does Mother Ayahuasca got to be nurturing and kind? I can hear.
Well, because I don't know. Maybe it's because we don't give birth. I don't know.
hey man, I support you, man. I'm just making a joke with them.
Yeah, but, for sure.
I mean, you talked about being able to remember memories like perfect at like 6 months old. All of a sudden, you could see clearly.
Yeah, definitely. That was the other crazy part. I realized that everything that we go through shapes our brain. And because it shapes our brain, nothing is ever lost and no memory is ever lost and everything is there and everything is accessible. And, you know, I remember, you know, without going into too much detail, I had a very traumatic experience when I was 10, and which was the experience that had been following me all these years. But ayahuasca, you know, one of the things, and I didn't mention this in my video, but one of the things that she showed me is that I had been so limited and concentrated on that one experience that was causing all of this anxiety and all of this, you know, all the stress and you know, night terrors and stuff, that I had forgotten the person that I was before that experience and what I was the most afraid of before that. And I remember she brought back this memory of me being 9 years old, and I was living in Italy at the time, and there was a hole in the ground. And I remember taking a stick and poking into the hole, and this huge rat came out. And I had completely forgotten about that, but this huge rat came out and I ran away, and the rat ran after me, and it was just a ridiculous moment that you have as a child. But before the traumatic experience that I had, that was the thing that I was most afraid of, and I had completely forgotten about that. You know, and just reconnecting with that and reprocessing all those memories, and I guess in a way it's kind of like you're sitting down with yourself and you're reliving your entire life, and there's no experience that I've come across so far that can give you that much gratitude over the experiences that you've had. It's kind of as if you were in a movie theater, in an IMAX movie theater with virtual reality, because you're in the experience itself, and you're watching it unfold in front of you. And, you know, obviously I feel like anybody watching a movie of their life would kind of feel grateful for, you know, what they have felt at the time and what they have been through and the person they became and the stuff they've overcome and all of that. So ayahuasca was literally like that. It was like sitting in a giant movie theater watching my life unfold in front of myself, and every single experience that has shaped the person that I have become, or that has shaped my brain in some way, and just feeling and reprocessing all of those memories and you know, just understanding who I was at a much deeper level.
Man.
I mean, that was after the purge, though. The purge was pretty bad.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, you had to go through, what I hear is about a half an hour of Inside Out?
Yeah, it depends on the person. For me, it's about 25 minutes to like half an hour or something like that. But it's crazy because, you know, my entire life I've always kind of had like a sensitive stomach, and I've always been an easy puker. And you know, people, yeah, like some people are just easy pukers. And, you know, people have made fun of me my entire life because of it. Cause like in some weird situations, I tend to puke easily. It's definitely one of the things that helped me when I was there, where, you know, all of the other people were struggling to get this out. You know, they had this uncomfort, you know, because they were so conditioned in you know, vomiting being such a bad thing, you know, and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna try to puke as, you know, as little as I can. Whereas, no, with ayahuasca, you have to puke as much as you can. Don't hold it back. Like, you know, you have to, you need your emotional release, so you need your physical release at the same time.
It entails the physical release of it. I love that you were puking and training all the way up to now.
Pretty much.
All the hardcore, I can fight it non-pukers, the same ones that try not to puke when they're drinking, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, I was in a very strange situation where, you know, people will come up to me and they will be like, man, how the fuck do you do it? And you're like clockwork, you know, you drink and then 20 minutes later you puke, whereas people are like, you know, struggling with it and stuff. And obviously I'm struggling, you know, during the puking, but other people were struggling to, you know, induce it properly and not fight it back and all of that.
So there's a real method to the purge.
There seems to be. there seems to be. That's what I've noticed. I've also noticed that the shaman rarely ever pukes. And I remember asking why that is. I mean, they do puke, but not as much as other people, and their purges are usually like, you know, small little pukes. Like they'll just gag a couple of times in a bucket, and then they'll be it. And I asked the shaman why that is, and I guess there is some sort of tolerance or something that they build when they drink ayahuasca every single day and for like several years.
Oh my!
Yeah,
that's what the shamans are doing.
Well, yeah, they're not really puking as much and purging as much. But the shaman is actually there during the entire ceremony, and even it's a little eerie because, you know, even when you don't feel like you are on planet Earth anymore, and that I was completely sober, but I felt completely sober, but the surrounding had changed 100% to this world that was completely different, like 100% perception change. There was no up or down, there was no left or right, but the one constant was the shaman. The shaman was always there, you know, and it's crazy because the next day there's this thing that people that drink ayahuasca usually do. It's called the sharing. So everybody gets in a circle, and then you eat breakfast and you share what your last night's experience was like, and you share as much as you're comfortable with. And everybody's constantly like saying, you know, the shaman was there the entire time, and sometimes you perceive him as a shadow, and sometimes you see his real self. And but he's the one constant thing that's there, and that kind of made me realize how much of a mastery of that realm this man has, and how much he can, you know, work with whatever it is that he works with on that side. The shaman is just is probably one of the most insane people, well, insane in a good way, people that I've ever met in my life so far.
Yeah, I mean, if you're down in the jungle and that's what you're doing, I mean, what a fascinating person to sit and have a talk with.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the shaman that I drank with, Don Luis, he was 63 years old, and he had been drinking ayahuasca since he was 7. So that's insane. Like, I was like, what? You were like, I found it hard. I was 24, and I found it hard on my body, and you know,
Times. And to drink it so many times. That what a fascinating individual to talk to, and probably a blessing and knowledge to talk to. I mean, one of the people that he met. You were down there with some interesting folks who you were putting on the video there that we got to, you know, meet through your journey.
Yeah, I was there with some really cool people, and what's interesting is that, you know, when I went there, I didn't know any of them. I knew Taylor off of Twitter, you know, and the others I just didn't know them. And now looking back at it, because we've seen each other go through such a big transformative experience, you know, I see them as family. You know, I would help any one of them, you know, in the best way that I can. And it's crazy that that bond was formed over 2 weeks.
Lifelong bonds. I mean,
insane.
That's the experience. I don't know. I think every president should have to enjoy some sort of DMT or ayahuasca or something, psilocybin, before you're elected president.
Yeah, but we're the crazy ones for thinking that.
Right. Instead of changing perception about what the fuck is going on, man.
You know, Adam, like, just yesterday I was talking to one of my friends, and we were talking about ISIS and everything that's going on in the Middle East and stuff like that. And I was like, it's fucked. Like, you know, there's no way we can fix this at this point. Because I was like, how are you going to fix it? You're going to go there and you're going to bomb the place, but then if you bomb the place, then you kill civilians, and the civilians that survive now hate the United States, and when ISIS goes in, obviously, they have nothing else, so they're going to,
They get to keep rebuilding, handing out those multi-billion-dollar construction contracts to their buddies, and I'm probably going to get murdered now because of this shit.
But imagine if we could give ayahuasca to those people. And I know it's a radical idea, and I know so many people will probably be against it. But I'm just saying, if there was a proper way of doing it with the research that we have, that, you know, I feel like maybe there is a way to, you know, counter radicalist ideologies with psychedelics. I don't think that's so far-fetched to believe.
Wow, imagine that. How... Talk about, chemical weaponry. It's a little different. I mean, I'm listening to Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast, and I'm listening to The Road to Armageddon, the 5 episodes about World War I. And,
awesome.
Dude, it is unreal. The way he tells the stories about these trenches and what these men went through, it's unreal. It's powerful. But, I mean, they talked about chemical weapons and what they used. But think about it. I mean, why is it so far-fetched to think about the craziness of bombs that they make that do all these crazy things? Well, I mean, hell, I don't know. I mean, whatever we do, man, we just got to do something. We can't just keep killing people, and vice versa. I mean, You know, you said it in your podcast, and I'm with it, man. I mean, love is what will heal all of it.
Yeah, pretty much. Love and psychedelics.
Man, we'd have a trouble getting an army together, I think, right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's insane to me, even in my own personal circle. And, you know, this is something that whenever I meet people that have had experiences, breakthrough experiences with psychedelics, this is something that I like to ask, and I invite you to also ask people this. But one of the things that I've noticed is that when there is one person that has a breakthrough psychedelic experience in a group of friends, it just kind of spreads. And it gives hope to some people, and some people start thinking differently. And just the fact that they're perceiving the world in a different way, now they have this notion that a chemical can be more than just medicine or food. You know, like stuff that you put into your body can be more than just that. There's something profound that happens. And, you know, it's something that I've noticed with my group of friends after I came back. You know, because we're by no stretch of the imagination from a rich environment. Grew up in the ghetto here in Montreal, and all of my friends also grew up in the ghetto. Lots of drug problems, lots of crime problems and stuff like that. And now, you know, bringing back this story, I have seen positive changes in my friends' lives just because of the interaction that they have had with me and the research that they have done on their own about psychedelics. And, you know, some of them went on to actually pursuing, you know, well-curated, and I guess you can say less recreational psychedelic experiences. And they're all doing, you know, way, way better. And I feel like that's a side of the psychedelic experience that we don't usually talk about, and it's how it affects communities. Because it does. And that's the awesome part about it.
Interesting.
It does affect.
You're right. A lot of people aren't talking about that. You know, I mean, think about that. You and I, from Rogan to listening to certain podcasts and people, Amber Lyon, all these that are spreading that message, you included. I never really thought about the close-knit even communities of the people that, you know, that touch, man.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like, you know, over the past year, after I came back from ayahuasca, I've lived in 4 cities. I've been moving around ever since. But yeah, I've lived in 4 cities, and everywhere I've been, I've kind of tried to connect with the local psychedelic community that's there. And one of the things that I've noticed, you know, in some places like San Francisco, you know, it's a very well-established psychedelic community that has been there for such a long time. And then you have places like Montreal where it's a person here and there that knows about them. But everywhere you go, you have these communities of people that are alternatively thinking about issues in a different way than the mainstream, and that are focusing on the healing and the value that human life brings, no matter whose life that is, rather than putting people in jail or, you know, labeling people in a certain way because of some sort of problem that they have. I don't know if that makes sense, but there's definitely more value.
Oh, it does, man. I mean, you know, Graham Hancock's video on TEDx, you know, that they banned from TED, his talk speaks, you know, to that. You have it posted on your YouTube, which I love.
Yeah, I did. And you know, I feel like it's so funny that they banned that because in banning it, it brought so many people to watch it, so many more people to watch it.
You would think all those smart people at TED would have known that, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I personally think it is ayahuasca, and it is, you know, this larger entity, this more powerful entity that is, you know, doing her work, that has been doing her work forever. And you know, strangely, that's kind of how she works. Like, she, it's always something like that, you know, it's always something like...
Does she move in mysterious ways?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, and I mean... Now I refer to her as she and Mother Ayahuasca, but, you know, coming back from that experience, I was not comfortable doing that.
Sure.
And I became very, very protective of my own spiritual being. I was a lot more sensitive to people's energies, and and their perceptions of life, and I guess in a way I was also aware of how their perceptions kind of shaped my perception. So I made a lot of changes in my life, coming back from that experience as well. You know, just cut some people out that were just toxic relationships, and you know, fixed some of them that I thought were worth fixing, and you know, put more love in the ones that needed more love, and just in general, I totally forgot what I was where I was getting at, but
you know why? It's because you started talking about all the people that you love. And sometimes when we think about those people, it can pull our creative away because it feels good. But you spoke to such a powerful point about changing your life. And it's hard for a lot of people to make that decision to cut out people in their lives, A, because they see the good in them or they've known them for a while, et cetera. You know, but that environmental influence is pivotal in change. And you made those tough cuts when you came back. That's most people can't do that.
Yeah, and, you know, it wasn't easy. When I came back, it was literally the first the first month was really hard. The first month I was just super, super sensitive, like spiritually sensitive to all these energies and stuff. And it came to the point where I just could not be in my environment anymore. I literally took everything I had and I packed up and I left and I went to another city and I just moved. I just moved and I lived somewhere else for a year. And now after a year, I just came back to Montreal. But I was away for a year and I was just working on myself and working on you know, the environment that I want to be in and that I want to create for myself and for the people that, you know, decide to be part of my life.
Yeah, you talked about the rite of passage as if almost you saw it kind of as a rite of passage in your life and the transition or a change, you know. It seems like I took a what I call my spiritual rampage before I found my cognitive rampage, which is weird. I dipped out to a Native American reservation in the middle of the fucking night, just like you did. And I was a nightclub guy, and I just dumped it all and disappeared. And it sounds crazy to people when I talk about that. You know, I was, you know, decently successful. I wasn't, you know, crazy, but, you know, it didn't feel right. And like you just said, you know what, fuck this. This environment's not right. I feel the energies, and I'm fucking out.
Yeah, that's interesting. What brought you to the Native American place? Like, did you already have some sort of connection to that place, or you felt called to it, or?
Oh, I get a question on my own show, man. I love this.
I kind of want to know. Like, why not?
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. yeah, actually, man, my family is part Croatan, Native American.
Cool.
And it's always been in my life and kind of been a part of the culture of my life. I'm a nature guy, been outdoors my whole life, that kind of thing. Matter of fact, I was just on a two-day excursion living on my kayak, eating what I caught, and I just got back from that. But
very cool.
Yeah, my brother is also big into it, and he lined up an opportunity to be able to go out. I went out to the Acomo Pueblo in Sky City. It's one of the oldest pueblos in New Mexico. And that was my rite of passage, I think, as I saw. Now, we had one in our family where you have to kill a boar, et cetera, but that was long since done. But this was more of a spiritual rampage. That's what I called it. And my journal was titled that. And then when I came back, I went from this nightclub, ex-drug dealer, gangster wannabe motherfucker, to I have to help people. And I went and got a master's of mental health counseling. I'm like on a mission, man, to just be like, fuck the chemical incarceration of synthetic drugs, and I worked in those hospitals for a long time as a therapist, you know. And that was, but before all that, I had a spiritual rampage, like you talk about, not with ayahuasca, I don't know. Do you think that the spiritual rampage has to happen before the cognitive rampage can happen?
What do you mean about the cog? What's the cognitive rampage?
I thought you'd never ask. No, for me, a cognitive rampage is living with the enthusiasm of questioning everything, including self, with a humbled outlook.
Right.
Is being hungry for competence in mind, body, and spirit, and being humble enough, but balancing that enthusiasm with humility so one is not arrogant but can still learn more, but passionately hungry for it. That's the cognitive rampage. I couldn't get there until that spiritual rampage happened, that spiritual revolution. It's weird.
Yeah, and you know, I think I think I kind of have had a very similar thing happen to me after my ayahuasca trip, where, you know, that's, well, after the one that I documented, there were other ones after that, but...
Tell me.
You know, after the ones that I documented, that's definitely one of the things that I mentioned in my video as well, is, you know, she left me with focus on the questions and not on the answers, and I feel like that was something that was very profound and exactly what I needed to hear to awaken that cognitive rampage, which is, I like that, man. I'm going to start using that. That's a cool way of putting it.
I appreciate it, man. I mean, the book will be out in about a month, The Cognitive Rampage.
Awesome.
I ended up developing, like, my own theory, kind of based. Mm-hmm. I journaled my whole life. I, too, had a pretty fucked up abusive childhood and into my teens, and I was a troublemaking dude. And when, you know, football dream fell apart, long story short, I wrote this as kind of how I got out and mixed it with all my academic, you know, competence and study and research and mentors, too. And It's funny how much when you're talking, it's like you read the damn book already. Because in the book, I have a tool called, I call it the Tools of Change. And one of them is called RSA, Rational Self-Analysis. And I talk about when people are in a state of transition, that we tend to be masters of criticism, right? And we make statements of subjective notions as if they're fact, but we're making statements about ourselves, the environment, and everything. So when you I'm rampaging now, dude. You asked me a question, I went off. This is so bad. Not a
no,
good
go for it.
For me.
It's totally awesome.
I'm supposed to interview you, man. And my point, long as I'm going to stop after this shit, I'll get tangential. Is, you know, rational self-analysis just means starting by changing the punctuation and looking back at those kids on how they're all wonderful, excited about something, and just asking yourself why. Instead of making statements of subjectivity, which generally are awfulized facts that are not even true, it's just, why do I feel that way? Why?
Yeah, it's just being introspective, right? It's just understanding yourself through your own, using the analytical part of your brain to understand your own self, which is what awareness is about, right? It's the awareness of, like, consciousness is the awareness of awareness.
Yes. Yeah, yes, I'm with. Yeah, I'm right with you. You said it. I hear what I wrote down. Remember, awareness is the key to creation. The higher the awareness, the higher the creation. It's our superpower in this realm. And there's levels of awareness too. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's self-reflection. And, you know, I think people, they get negative because, A, they don't want to be wrong. And so we make these statements of the world's this, they're all this, and I'm this. We like you said, we make statements about ourselves and our own perceptions as if they're concrete fucking fact.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And ayahuasca did that for you. It broke down your concrete beliefs.
Yeah, man. And one of the things that I think ayahuasca... and not just ayahuasca, several psychedelic experiences, several breakthrough psychedelic experiences that I've had since. I've tried psilocybin and LSD and...
Now, have you done DMT? Have you done DMT since ayahuasca?
Yes.
Enlighten me, sir.
I'm quite a big fan of the NN.
Enlightening.
And then DMT. It's cool, man. DMT, I was actually fascinated with DMT after ayahuasca. I honestly didn't even know about DMT until I started really looking into ayahuasca and what ayahuasca was. But I remember, you know, listening to all these Joe Rogan interviews about DMT and then, you know, watching trip reports from people on YouTube and stuff. And just realizing that this is the chemical that's in ayahuasca, and that, you know, if ayahuasca is a door to something else, like, this is, like, part of that door. So I can't say that I was called towards it, but I kind of was, because I was called towards ayahuasca, which is DMT, and then...
Did DMT find you?
DMT, yes. Yeah, absolutely. DMT found me. I was looking for DMT for a very, very long time. I was looking for DMT for months. And, you know, just, you know, asking people in the hood, in the ghetto, every drug passes by here. So I was like, you know, there must be someone in this surrounding that has ever heard of it. But no, it's not a recreational drug that people do for fun. So it is not something that you will easily find in the streets. And one day, literally, after I put out one of my first videos, it wasn't the ayahuasca videos at the time, I made a psilocybin video, which if I was to remake right now, I would probably change, because I don't know if that's exactly how I would want to illustrate psilocybin. So to anybody that goes to my channel, you've been warned, that was a very early stage me. But I shared this psilocybin video on my Facebook page, and one of my friends from university, who I just knew from my classes, literally reached out to me and was like, hey, you're into psychedelics, I'm into psychedelics too. And that was the only other person that was into psychedelics that I met in Montreal at the time. And he happened to make DMT.
So DMT did find you. Now, the guest I had on the show last week, Tony Mance, Tony Jack the Bear Mance, big world-renowned sound engineer guy from Melbourne, Australia, he had a DMT experience on purpose and changed his life, and he said specifically, like you did, DMT found him. And so then I asked you, and sure enough.
Well, I feel like that's kind of true with every psychedelics to a certain extent. I remember a few days ago I was reading Tom Schroeder's Acid Test, where he talks about the history of LSD and all that stuff. And one of the things that Albert Hofmann, the man who discovered LSD, talks about was that when he synthesized LSD originally, I think it was in 1938 or something, when he synthesized it, he didn't find medical use in it, so he put it in a closet, and he just kind of forgot about it for something like 4 years or 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then out of the blue, 5 years later, he just felt like he should go back and specifically take that one vial that had that one chemical, which happened to be lysergic acid, diethylamide 25, and then the entire LSD, as we know it today, happened. But you know, he also, you know, to the point, until the point where when he died, he was saying that LSD called him. He wasn't the one who, you know, invented or discovered LSD.
I am a fan of that. It's funny how that ends up asking I end up asking everyone that, and it turns out being that, because it felt that similar way to me. But I'm going to save my story for another time, because it's about you. Big time, man. You make me want to rampage off, man. You talk about these experiences, and it fucking fuels me, you know what I mean?
That's cool, man. I love hearing that. So that's awesome. Thanks.
It's how we live, man. We took a chance, and we're like, you know what? And then you see certain things, you know? And whether certain people see it without, you know, these experiences, you know, there's enough people to be said that have made life-changing things and all this without experience of psychedelics, too. So, I mean, it happens without it, and people find those changes. But, I mean, why do you think it takes something like that for certain people like you and myself and, you know, and Jack? And, I mean, and we're all kind of different people. You know, we really are. Jack is a tatted up, looks like a biker rock and roll music legend guy, you know what I mean? And but we're so similar, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I was asking myself that on the plane ride back from Ecuador. And that, I mean, just being in Ecuador was crazy, because during the 2 weeks I was there, there were 3 earthquakes. My flight out was actually delayed because there was an earthquake that killed 2 people, which hadn't happened in like 20 years, which is crazy. Which was insane. And I remember sitting in the airport, you know, waiting for information on when my new flight would be, and just looking at all of these people and all these Americans and Canadians and, you know, Europeans who had, you know, they're tourists to Ecuador. And I was like, man, so many people here came for such different reasons, and I'm sure some of the people here came for ayahuasca, but why ayahuasca? You know, why is this like the path? And I asked myself that question the entire way back, and then I remember when coming back, I had a friend of mine who is a very devout Muslim person, and, you know, Montreal is it's a very multicultural city, so there's a quite a large Muslim population here. And, you know, in terms of, I don't want to say intensity, but I guess you could say in terms of intensity on like how people practice their religion, there are some groups that are more, I guess the word is like ascetic. Like they follow the teachings more than other groups, right?
You got Christians that play with snakes, and you got Christians that speak in tongue, and then you got some that just go on Sunday, and there's some with rock bands, and there's some at little churches. So yeah, there's different varieties of intensely practicing. Yeah, I like that better. Who knows in today's fucking PC world?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, I had a friend of mine that I knew from university, and we always used to talk about spirituality and philosophy and, you know, the big picture, but we didn't connect on anything else because I was just a guy that was open to drug use and alcohol and all these things, and all of my friends were into the party scene and all that, and he was just someone who, like, you know, couldn't pass in front of a bar because that's, you know, that's against his religion, and, you know, we had to kind of, but he's very smart, very spiritual person, and I've, you know, coming back, I kind of wanted to know what he thought of my experience, and I wanted to tell him about my experience, because he's, to this day, he's one of the most spiritual people I know, and I have an incredible amount of respect for him, and, you know, one of the things that he mentioned to me, he wasn't close to it at all. You know, some Muslim or Christians are just like, oh, you know, drugs are wrong. It, you know, it's the devil's, you know, practice or whatever.
Right.
But my friend, one of the things that he said, and that's one of the things that I said in my video as well, is that, you know, if you actually look at the teachings in this and you take away what you want out of them, like take Islam, for example. Yeah, it's been vilified in the media and all that. But if you look at the Quran, there are some really profound things in the Quran, and one of the things that it says is that there are as many paths to God as there are breaths that a person takes during a lifetime, and I don't think that that's wrong. You know, I feel like this psychedelic way of doing things is one of those paths, but anything can bring you there. You know, and I feel like it personally has a lot to do with what you were just talking about, you know, the introspection and self-analysis and, you know, just practices that make it so that you become introspective or you know, that you self-analyze and you become contemplative. And those practices, it's not about the practices, but it's about where the practices bring you. So it's not about the psychedelics, and it's not about, you know, it's not about Islam, and it's not about Christianity. It's about what happens to you and what you connect with when you practice that specific thing, you know? And I feel like if everyone kind of had a notion or an idea or people around them who were connected to the direct experience of the sacred, there wouldn't be a space for intense radicalism. And maybe that's just my opinion, but I feel like if a bunch of people drank ayahuasca, and we were in a society where you have a rite of passage, where when you're 18, you get your ayahuasca session, congratulations, you turned 18, you get your ceremony, this is it, you have a direct experience of the sacred, and we live in a society where everybody goes through that rite of passage, I feel like it would be a lot harder for people to manipulate a set of teachings and become radicalized.
Woo! That, my friend, is what I call a cognitive rampage. That is it. That's it.
That is awesome.
You just did a cognitive rampage, my friend. That's what that is. That's how we end this show. That's how you do it. I can't even recap that, man. I hope you guys listen to that cognitive rampage. And like we argued in the beginning, it seems a lot like Christianity, and people are talking when my man's telling me about his experience he can't explain, and I've heard a lot of Christians talk to me that same way, and Muslims, they all talk like this, and yet, I love how you say ayahuasca leaves no room for the radical, it wouldn't leave that space, man. I'm with you, dude. Practice whatever you preach out there, if it makes you feel good, if it brings love to you. If it causes harm to other people and to judge other people, fucking let it go, man. It's about love.
Yeah, for sure. Guaranteed. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I'm also writing a book, but this is not going to be out in, like, a long time because it's my own personal journey. And one of the things that I feel like, talking about psychedelics, we kind of have to also be aware of is what the internet is doing to this movement. Because spirituality in the digital age is a completely different experience than, you know, what it has been throughout human history. Spirituality in the digital age is something that doesn't leave room for, a radicalization that cannot be questioned, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? And I feel like because of the internet, you know, one of the things that I find was very that helped me with my own personal spiritual growth was when I brought this story out through on Twitter or on YouTube or whatever. A lot of people were skeptical, and I feel like just the fact that we're able to do that, just the fact that we're able to have those conversations, we're like, yeah, you're skeptical. And it's totally awesome that you're skeptical. It's totally awesome that you're asking these questions and that you might not even believe me when I tell you that there is an entity behind this drug, or if you want to call it a drug or a medicine. It's just the fact that you can do that, like, helps everybody's growth. You know what I mean? And I feel like, you know, going back to those really radicalized places where there's a certain ideology that controls how the place is run, you know, that's what's missing, right? It's the freedom of speech, the ability to be able to criticize and to be skeptical about things, and the internet doesn't allow for that. So it doesn't allow for you to not have conversations like that. Which, you know, the haters have a place. That's what I'm saying.
Hey man, put out your Twitter out there, man. Put your Twitter handle out there. Put your YouTube out there, man. Say what's up to some friends. Put anybody out there you want to, man, before we end the show.
Yeah, for sure. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me on Twitter at Damiano R. That's DamianoR. My YouTube channel is Just Don't Fall. So youtube.com/JustDon'tFall. And if you want to follow me on Facebook, my Facebook page is Psychonaut Journalist.
Perfect, man. Brother, thank you for sharing this with me, man.
Dude, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'd like to catch back up with you, man, on your journey. And who knows where you'll be living in a year or two from now and what experiences you're going to have and be into it. I'd love to catch up again with you on the show.
Yeah, for sure. You know, let me know anytime. It's been a lot of fun. Love talking to you. Love these cognitive rampages. So, yeah, let's do it again.
You just burst it out in like two of them, man, back to back.
happens. I like it.
Yeah, but you had to do your spiritual rampage first to do it.
Yeah, pretty much. The spiritual rampage plus the cognitive rampage. You should call, I don't know if your book has a title already, but spiritual rampage is a pretty good title.
It's called The Cognitive Rampage.
Oh, okay, right. It's called The Cognitive Rampage, right. Yeah.
My cool. Journal is The Spiritual Rampage. But brother, I mean, thanks for sharing your life with me, man. This moment, the list, everybody, much love from me, man. It took so much bravery to do that shit. And I admire you, brother, from 24 years old, doing that, sharing this journey, and then being brave enough to share it with everybody else, and including me, man. Thank you, brother.
All right. Thank you for having me, man.
Hey, I want you to check out another podcast that I listen to with two friends of mine. That's my buddy Chris Fisher and his friend Jesse Cage in the FNK podcast. You can catch them at fisherandcage.com, but look them up on iTunes. They're a great podcast. I love listening to the fellas each week, but that's the FNK podcast.